Hello and welcome to the S Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture topics beginning with the letter S. I'm Dominic Nguyen.
I'm Danny Sudhivarakum.
I'm Ian McConville, the Plague Bearer.
Okay. The good thing is that this week I am not Dom McWin.
What?
Unlike some people who believe that I'm an self-important Irishman? Was that the line?
McWin?
McWin.
Apparently I haven't been hanging around enough.
Apparently that's one of my new names, Dom McWin.
Okay.
What do they think about my name then? yeah.
I don't know if they think about your name. It might be one of those things, you know,
it's
like
true.
I guess
it just sort of ceases to really exist past the fourth syllable.
Yeah. So anyway, today's pop culture topic is survival horror games. Let's see here. We have a kind of a love-hate relationship with this genre, given that it was built around its limitations. But let's start with the regular question, which is, what was your first survival horror game?
Let's see. Okay, thinking back, I did play Resident Evil 1, which I guess is the traditional beginning of the genre. Prior to that, I take that back. I did play Alone in the Dark once. It was on a really crappy computer, and I couldn't get out of the first room because I kept getting killed.
I don't know if anyone actually plays Alone in the Dark so much as tries to cope with its existence.
Here's a question for you. You know that very end part of The Secret of Monkey Island 2 where, you know, LeChuck has that voodoo doll of Guybrush and he keeps sticking needles in it at random?
Mm-hmm.
He comes in the room and sticks needles in him and stuff?
Yeah,
so that used to freak me out when I was a kid. Does that count as survival horror? There were puzzles. There was, you know, this big bad villain who came in and stabbed you at random. That's got the earmarks of it, except for the funny part.
But did anyone come through a window or something that isn't a door?
No, he mostly just came in through the door and then said, "Hey, I found you," and then he stabbed his voodoo doll.
All right.
And he got teleported to a random part of the last area. I wanted to call it the last dungeon, then I realized it was Monkey Island, so I can't call it that.
Room which you can click on things.
And, yes, many rooms in which you could click on many things. So anyway, never mind. All right, go ahead, Danny, sorry. Or actually, that was it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, what did you think about it?
Well, I eventually did get used to the controls. They did take some acclimation. And, you know, that whole excuse about, well, you're... It's all about suspense, so running away should be hard. Yeah, bull. I do not accept that. But I got used to it eventually.
Sorry, I'm just used to Bayonetta, where running away involves turning into a panther and running twice as fast as anything else in the game.
You run away?
From, you know, things like the lava flow? Yes.
Did you know you could parry some of those?
What? All right, let's get past that. Let's get past this. Bayonetta is obviously not survival horror.
I see a deep, dark hole. We're getting very close to it. Personally, my start was a little bit of Resident Evil 1. I didn't own it myself. My neighbor down the street had a PlayStation. You know, I sort of watched as he played it. I don't know if that's the proper way to be playing those kind of games, but I remember even at the time going, what the hell is with this voice acting? I'm not even sure I knew what the word voice acting meant, but I'm pretty sure something in my brain said that.
Don't come!
No! Don't.
Yeah.
Jill Sandwich. So anyway, yeah, my first experience was also Resident Evil 1. And my experience was actually Resident Evil 1 on the Saturn, which was in some ways worse than this Resident Evil on the PlayStation. Because, you know those loading screens where it's like,
yeah,
the door slowly opening, or, you know, going up those metal stairs? It would go, loading. Loading. Or, you know, you would, on those stairs, it would go, dunk, 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 loading, 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 dunk, 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 dunk. And then the whole thing would load. This was kind of the case with many Saturn games that were PlayStation ports.
Man, I wonder how much time I have wasted staring at loading screens.
And yeah, so the thing was that, you know, it was hard to get into the whole, like, survival horror part of it because I would go and make a sandwich in between scenes.
A Jill sandwich?
Jill sandwich.
I suppose not.
Don't come! yeah, that's the thing, is that before I ever actually played Resident Evil, I had already listened to that old audio file that people have People have lost to the internet. I haven't been able to find it recently.
I bet you can find it on YouTube, but this thing existed back before the existence of YouTube.
Yeah. It was a thing called Resident Gigolo, if anybody remembers that.
You remember the name?
Yes, I remember the name. And so the thing about it was that it was a bunch of voice samples from Resident Evil put together in such a way to make it sound like really bad porn. Because really, you know, B-level horror and B-level porn are pretty close to each other. There's some overlap.
There is somewhat of an overlap. I mean, just the sheer, not really shock, but, you know, not something you don't expect to see normally.
But yeah, I mean, so let's talk about Resident Evil 1, because that was pretty much the explosion in popularity for survival horror. I mean, you'd had Alone in the Dark, and you had Clock Tower, which I don't think very many people remember.
Not really.
But Resident Evil was the one that really made it big. And so the thing is that, you know, survival horror is actually mostly an American genre, isn't it? You have no idea, do you?
Nah, absolutely no idea.
But that's my theory about
it. I think it's telling that most survival horror games are in
English.
In English.
Well, that's because Capcom does
otherwise.
It that way.
Yeah.
Actually, wait a second. Silent Hill is also voiced in English,
see?
I think. I have to check on that now. It's been a while because Silent Hill games...
Well, just say it with conviction, then change the Wikipedia entry later, and you're right.
Yes. Yes.
Wikipedia Brown.
I'm just thinking, it's like, oh, yes. The survival horror genre is like elephants. It just keeps getting more and more. Survival horror games, they're very healthy and can be hunted at will.
But yeah, I think the concept of survival horror is very much rooted in
American horror genres. Because, I mean, the Japanese horror genre is much more Fatal Frame style and Siren style as opposed to, you know, Resident Evil, Silent Hill style, because those are much more horrors of the supernatural ghost kind of thing. Like, Japanese horror is very much based on the ghost story.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. American horror is much more based on the monster story, so...
No, mm-hmm. That covers it, yeah.
Yeah. And so Resident Evil is all about its zombies, and its really, really, really bad voice acting. At least until recently, right? They've gotten better?
They've gotten better. Well, specifically, survival horror has reached the same threshold as anime and most games, in that people are willing, like actual professionals are willing to... do work for it, and people have made names for themselves by not sucking at it, and the more they not suck at it, the, you know, they actually become, well, celebrities in their own right.
But it doesn't feel like survival horror has much of a foothold in the industry right now. I mean, it's the game we've been talking about, Resident Evil, has turned into an action game at this point.
Yeah.
That happened with 4, right? Correct?
Yeah.
Resident Evil's 1, 2, and 3 were all the same style?
Yeah.
And then 4 started the sort of over-the-shoulder Gears of Resident Evil kind of thing.
Yeah.
Was 3 Nemesis?
3 was Nemesis.
3 was Nemesis. 3.5 was Code Veronica, right?
Well, no. Code Veronica was not numbered.
Okay.
The non-PlayStation games were never numbered.
I see.
Or initially.
Righto.
Yeah, here's actually coming back to the acting thing for Resident Evil. I could never take Code Veronica seriously. Because that was back when all of Capcom's voice actors came from Marvel.
Okay, that didn't know.
And so every time, you know, there were certain lines, I would just think, let's go crazy!
Okay, yeah, I could see where that'd be a problem long term.
Because if I remember correctly, and if I'm wrong, the internet will correct me, of course. But if I remember right, Claire's voice in Code Veronica was Jubilee.
It's a possibility.
It's a very strong possibility. I remember this strongly enough that either I convinced myself of the fact, or it's true. Who knows which?
It's the internet. It is true until someone proves otherwise.
All right. So anyway, we were talking about Resident Evil as a series. So, yeah, what was your opinion of the Resident Evil game, not in terms of just style, but as a game? Because... those first 3 Resident Evils made a really bad impression on me because I got killed by the camera more often than I got killed by a monster.
The camera? Really? The tank controls didn't kill you?
Oh yeah, the tank controls were pretty bad too, where you could only turn very slowly. And then, which game was it that first introduced the 180 turn? I think it was 2?
3
for give you the 180 turn first?
Yeah.
What's this latest 3? Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think back now, but I remember having to turn a lot, and actually got so used to that the quick turn threw me off for a little bit.
Yeah, thanks to Resident Evil, I've never actually made good use of quick turn technology in modern games. Just so used to going, all right, I'm going to take a few more hits as I turn. It's going to happen.
I mean, you kind of expect that in a zombie movie. You know, people, as they're turning to run away, they occasionally get bit.
And you
but wait a second, what about Zombieland, where the first rule is cardio? I love that movie.
I'll have to watch it, apparently.
You should. But yeah, I mean, so which was worse, the controls or the camera?
In the first one, I hated the camera, if only because the cuts didn't seem very logical.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have gotten better with two. It felt more cinematic. It had better presentation then, and you kind of expected when the cuts were going to be. And so
it was more consistent.
And the controls kind of grew on me by two, though.
And so one of the things is that people say that that's a feature and not just bad design because, you know, horror is all about what you don't know. And so that zombie off screen that you can hear but is coming toward you and you can't see it because the camera is terrible, even though it's like 5 feet in front of you.
Yeah, what's Ninja Gaiden's excuse?
Ninja Gaiden's excuse is terrible, terrible level design.
Too much attention to breasts.
Okay, I guess that makes sense.
Which really is kind of something that you can say about a lot of B-level horror once again. But anyway, but yeah, I mean, people said that that was part of the presentation. They sort of, going to Silent Hill, even, where which sort of inherited a lot of Resident Evil's flaws and turned them into features.
Yeah.
I mean, your character specifically could not aim to save his life.
Literally.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
He just missed a lot. And then all of Silent Hill was sort of seen filtered through your flashlight, wasn't it?
Yes.
And so the camera basically was under your control, but pathetic.
Well, Silent Hill 1 still holds a dear place in my heart because it's something that I feel the video game industry as a whole doesn't do enough of, and that is it panders to its limitations. It goes, all right, here's where we get stuck at. And rather than trying to figure out a way of fooling you into think those limitations don't exist, they just work with it. They just roll with it. I don't know. Like the short draw distance became massive amounts of fog. The very low-res, dirty textures, the low-poly count characters, it all became just for the blurriness of the world and leaves you a little more disoriented. I don't know. It is appealing.
But, so, in Resident Evil 1, do you think that was actually part of the design as they came up with it? Or do you think that was just, you know, the limitations and they sort of ran into them face first?
Well, with Resident Evil 1, they have the same issues with, you know, low poly count and muddy textures. But to hide that, that's where the pre-rendered backgrounds came from. You know, they went, well, we want to show this grand vista, so we're going to pre-render it and limit the camera to this angle.
Yeah.
But they just hadn't gotten good at presenting that kind of view to us yet.
So about where do you think that they got a hang of it over at Capcom?
3? I feel 2 felt pretty good.
Okay.
It might be nostalgia, like retro rosing my glasses for me, but I don't know. I felt 2 was pretty good.
Danny, what about you?
I think from what I remember, like the first time I really stopped hating, or the first time I really, you know, learned to stop worrying and love the controls was, or love the camera was probably Code Veronica, which, you know, coincided with an upgrade in the quality of the system, so. Might have been a contributing factor.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've never really, like, I've always come to accept that survival horror, you're not going to be able to play well, or you're not going to be able to move around well, because if you could move around well, then you'd be playing Devil May Cry.
Or Bayonetta.
Which is basically Devil May Cry 2.
I'm trying to remember.
Real Devil May Cry 2.
I was about to ask. It's like, they made a Devil May Cry 2? I have this feeling that they skipped straight to 3.
They skipped to 3 and 4, and they went back to 2.
Okay.
And they made the protagonist a girl.
But yeah, I mean, so is it a feature of all survival horror games that they have to be, you know, sort of out of your control a little bit so that makes it a little more freaky when something's coming up behind you? Or do you think it's just bad design? Because even in Resident Evil 4 and 5, you still turn like a tank. Yeah. It's just that the perspective is different, and the world has been upgraded, and, you know, so you can
see zombies from further away.
You can actually see them from further away, exactly.
Well, it's quite clear, you know, we've proven with the technology we can do amazing feats of acrobatics. So I feel that, you know, these choices were indeed purposeful. They're part of survival horror is that sort of sense of fumbling powerlessness, I guess you could say.
Which is funny because the premier survival horror series has you playing, you know, special ops.
Yes. I think that was, maybe they just did that because SWAT guys are cool.
I'm a member of STARS.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Whenever I get that thought stuck in my head that these people are special ops, so they should be doing better, I remember Rebecca. And then I go, wait, no, they suck. It's okay.
Which one was Rebecca again?
Rebecca was the little medic girl.
Was she Chris's carry-on in Resident Evil 1
yeah,
to go with Barry?
So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, Jill had Barry, and then Chris had Rebecca, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And she's just useless? But yeah, so let's talk about the evolution then. We've gotten a little into it, but, you know, we had Resident Evil 1. Resident Evil 2, they'd gotten the hang of the camera work. And then, you know, you go to Resident Evil 3 where you can actually turn around.
Ha-ha!
Well, I mean, we're talking about the controls being kind of, well, sluggish and tank-like with the early iterations. When Silent Hill, as it used to be 5 and became Homecoming, gee, I wonder why that happened. One of the things that made my heart sink very far when I was watching the announcement video was the developer talking about how Silent Hill's combat was always so terrible, so what we did is we made the guy a Marine, and now he can fight. No! No, no, no.
Oh, I'm getting Prince of Persia flashbacks.
Because, yeah, the whole point of the Silent Hill series is that usually you're just some dude, right?
Yeah, I mean...
I mean, Silent Hill 1, you're a father. Silent Hill 2, you're a widower. Silent Hill 3, I forget. And Silent Hill 4, you're just this dude stuck in a room.
3, you're a daughter, and 4, you're just a guy renting a flat.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Resident Evil 1, you're a member of STARS. Resident Evil 2, you're a cop.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 3, you're a member of STARS. Resident Evil 4, you're Secret Service. Yeah. Resident Evil 5, you're an ex-member of STARS.
No, you're He-Man.
Oh, that's right, you're He-Man.
Or Captain Falcon, take your pick.
We'll get into that later.
Well, yeah.
Ow.
Meanwhile, so, you know, we've talked about the horror of not being able to control your character very well. We've talked a little bit about the horror of not being able to see what your character sees, only being able to, you know, hear things cinematically or, like, hear the scratching or the rumbling, that kind of thing. We've talked a little bit about the acting. Let's not talk more about the acting, actually.
I could bash the acting for hours, but...
It's funny. I think of survival horror, and I think of really bad cutscenes, and I almost kind of welcome them. I've been watching the trailers for the next Silent Hill on the Wii, and the cutscenes people ripping on for being very wooden. So I'm like, yeah, that's Silent Hill.
I'm right now thinking of Frank West. Isn't his lines like, I've covered wars?
I've covered wars, you know.
Or, I'm a member of STARS. Sorry, that's from Marvel vs. Capcom, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, like... So how much of the acting do you think was on purpose? Because do you guys remember when Resident Evil, the first one, was re-released with a new script and new acting and people complained?
It doesn't surprise me in the least. But I think, I don't know if it was intentional, but it was very strongly welcomed. Because, you know, the people who enjoy survival horror, I imagine, are largely the same people who go out of their way and look for bad B-movies.
I don't know. To me... Bad acting is like seeing these sort of wooden characters fumble around in the cutscenes is kind of
like Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within.
Yes, well, that in itself is creepy, and I don't know. That's what the game's about, isn't it?
I don't think it's that kind of creepy they're looking for.
Yeah.
Well, worked for me.
So, are you sad that, you know, as of Resident Evil 5, the acting's actually, you know, gotten to a slightly above average as opposed to mediocre to abominable, which is the hallmark of the other Resident Evil games?
I'll be honest, I didn't really like 5, and I didn't play 4. I let me clarify. I played floor, but could not make it past the first battle scene because I didn't know about the run button. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. If you're playing it the style that you'd expect from Resident Evil, they're just going to run over you.
Because... I thought I was just being terrible at the game, and I got frustrated.
Yeah. I'm not surprised, actually. That would frustrate.
It's kind of like if you didn't know that you could run in Dead Rising. Oh, man.
But I should say I liked 5 in the way that I like Earth Defense Force, in that it was really awesome, in quotation marks.
Wait, you're comparing Resident Evil 5 to EDF?
Yes.
I can see that.
See? You, Boulder.
Hey. Don't spoil the last half of this podcast, okay?
No, the more to the point. I can definitely see where he's coming from. I mean, it's a co-op game, and it's best played with somebody next, you know, somebody actually next to you to, you know, shout out.
Yeah.
You
know, look out, zombies! They're coming!
From where?
Everywhere!
Yeah.
You suffer best when you're alone, so... I don't know.
So do you think co-op ruins the survival horror part? Because you have a partner that you can actually rely on instead of a useless meat puppet?
You're not, like, if you're not alone, it means that there are no points when there, it takes out the feeling of vulnerability. I mean, if you know there's somebody next to you who's shooting them off, I mean, it makes for a great action sequence. It makes for great, you know, video game entertainment. But it's not the way survival horror works.
Loneliness can be terrifying, and, well...
Loneliness is the number one terror, really.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love co-op. I want more games to have co-op.
Yeah, exactly.
But not in my survival horror.
So House of the Dead doesn't count as survival horror, right?
Not to me.
Rail shooter?
I mean, really? The closest... Well, no, House of the Dead doesn't count as survival horror for a very specific reason.
Which is?
Unlimited ammo.
Oh, yeah, huh?
I mean, I love how they actually ripped the entire storyline of Resident Evil for the purpose of House of the Dead. And you know, I'm the first to, you know, tout the power of House of the Dead and its variants, because I love the game. But
didn't you dual wield your way through the first few games?
Yes, I 2-credit cleared the first 2 games.
Nice.
Gun in each hand, baby.
And it's fun. I mean, like, but that's part of the problem.
So wait, how about this? If you're playing Typing of the Dead alone, is that survival horror?
I don't know anything about the game.
Typing of the Dead holds a very different place in my heart.
Are you sure it's not survival horror?
Well, that's the thing.
I bet it is.
That's the thing. Typing of the Dead is terrifying for a completely different reason.
I don't know anything about this game, okay. But I still find this humorous.
Okay, so Typing of the Dead, so what they did was they took House of the Dead. They took the entire...
No, they took House of the Dead 2, specifically.
Well, they took House of the Dead 2. They took the entire game sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of handing you a gun, they let you use the Dreamcast keyboard. They had an arcade version of this game where there were 2 keyboards set up. This game would not have been... You could not akimbo this game.
In terms of how you killed things, each letter represented a bullet. So, you know, there would be a zombie, and you would have to type in the word...
Hate.
You know, hate.
Huh.
So you type H-A-T, and the zombie gets shot 3 times. You hit E, the zombie actually goes down.
Okay.
And, you know, so you'd see zombies and there'd be words just floating above their heads, and you just type the words as quickly as you can.
Yeah, bats would be one letter. Bosses would be multiple choice questions.
Bosses?
We're awesome.
We're awesome for that specific reason. Like, the other part of it is, like, you know, bats and, like, the projectiles that you're supposed to shoot down,
mm-hmm.
those would just be random letters. So you'd have to, you know, in the middle of trying to type and kill out one guy, you'd type in another letter so you could shoot something down.
I like this.
And yeah, the bosses themselves, the way bosses work in House of the Dead is you have to shoot them in, you know, in a weak point a certain number of times before they finish their charge, otherwise they're just going to hit you.
Hmm.
And you know, if you hit them enough times, you stagger them. But instead of just words, it'd be actual sentences. And if I remember correctly, there was one boss who actually had jokes.
Yes.
So you had to type out the entire joke in order to actually stop him from killing you. It was awesome.
Yes. Yes, it was actually really dry humor, too, which was incredibly surprising. Meanwhile, like, Emperor was a multiple-choice question. You remember that? It's like, you meet someone in a dark alley. What do you do? And there are 3 answers that you can choose from. And you finish one of them.
Yeah.
And then you actually get to shoot him.
Because, yeah, that was the thing about Emperor. Emperor could turn into any of the other bosses because he was made of liquid, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on what he turned into, you had to find the right weak point and shoot it down. So functionally, this turns into type in the right answer.
Oh, jeez.
Meanwhile, what was it? It was the Hydra, right? The Hydra, you had to answer correctly a trivia question by typing out the answer.
I'm trying to remember now. I don't know if it was the Hydra. I remember, I think it was Strength. I think it was the one that had the weird pickup lines and jokes that you needed to actually...
Oh, the one with the chainsaw you go in the hedge maze with, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you actually had to write 4 sentences before he reached you.
I mean, he was, you know... He was running at you pretty quick. You were backing up pretty quick, so, you know, it would take him some time to get there. But, you know, there's a guy with a chainsaw running at you, and you have to type in this pickup line.
It's pretty awesome. And you know how in House of the Dead cutscenes, you know, it usually shows, what is it, Ace and Rogan?
No, D. There's G.
G.
Rogan. It was the first game.
Yes.
And I think it was Gary and James for the second game.
Oh, okay. So it's Gary and James. You know, usually you see their agents, and they have... handguns, and they're just running around, you know, looking like agents with running around. Yeah,
dogs of the AMS.
Yes, thanks, Danny. And the thing was that in Typing of the Dead, they have Dreamcasts on their backs, and they have Dreamcast keyboards in front of them, and they have these big battery packs, right, to power the Dreamcast.
It looked kind of like the guys from Ghostbusters, except instead of the actual, you know, wand portion of it, they had a keyboard in front of them, and their backpacks were Dreamcasts with a giant Duracell battery on top.
Nice. Yes.
Which is different from the Dreamcasts that were attached to people in Voot.
Well, that's because the Dreamcasts on Voot actually, you know, sort of integrated. These guys were just wearing giant Dreamcasts.
And that, by the way, is why at conventions you will occasionally see people in, like, long trench coats with Dreamcasts on their backs.
Nice.
And keyboards. It's pretty awesome.
If they're in judo uniforms, it's something else entirely.
All right.
What?
Well,
Sigeta Sanjiro?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Anyway, moving on from that, back to new actual survival horror. Let's talk about Resident Evil 5, because it's fresh in my memory, and it's quite stupid.
I mean, okay, so you start with, you know, you get the idea of the fast zombie. Everyone by now has gotten used to that since they remade their Resident Evil 1 to include them.
Actually, yeah, that's something that that didn't necessarily sit well with me, like the difference between the fast zombie and the slow zombie. I mean, the slow zombie was kind of a system limitation, right? Because they just couldn't handle that many of them moving that fast, like, running at you, right?
Two moving that fast. There's usually only one on the screen at the time.
Well, a zombie is just the easiest thing to program because it is such basic AI. I mean, a dog is harder to program than a zombie.
Because the zombie will basically just walk slowly toward the player at all times,
like,
right?
Zombie goes, I have a target. I'm going to go eat that thing.
As opposed to the dog, which is going to, like, wait for an opening and then
actually,
jump at you.
Which might actually react to things that you do.
Yes.
That's true.
The zombie goes, you shot me. I don't care. I'm going to eat you.
Have you shot me enough? No, I'm eating you then.
So the official move to the fast zombie in Resident Evil was 4, right?
Uh-huh. 4, they started moving quick. Yeah, 4 was the official, like, Resident Evil portion of it. I'm trying to remember if the remake came out before then, though, with the red face.
Well, regardless, in 4 and 5, though, the zombies not only became fast, they also became self-aware. Which
yeah,
is
that's true.
Wielded weapons. Yeah.
And meanwhile, Silent Hill is not a zombie game at all. Fatal Frame is a ghost game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, really, we're talking basically about Resident Evil and then, by extension, Dead Rising. Dead Rising all only had slow zombies, didn't it?
I'm pretty sure all of the zombies themselves would have been, well, relatively slow. I mean, when you got close enough to them, they would sort of fake a charge at you.
Yeah, I'm pretty...
They would sort of lurch, right? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they just took the AI from Dynasty Warriors and applied it to the zombies in that game. Think about it. They're just, like, in Dynasty Warriors, you have crowds of people
around.
All just milling around, waving their swords around, and now and again you'll see one swipe at you.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean...
So, in terms of actual horror, I'm guessing that slow zombies were a little more frightening to you than fast zombies, because fast zombies made it more action-y, and then the whole hallmark of the slow zombie is inevitability, right?
Well, I guess with the addition of fast enemies, they also added fast guns and fast ammo and reaction time, and it became more about
Twitch,
and less time for you to go, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap.
That's true. I do miss some of the oh crap, oh crap. I mean, that was...
Like how the last part of Resident Evil 1, basically, you had to survive for a solid minute until someone tossed you a rocket launcher, right? Then you were in Amazon jail?
Yeah.
And whereas with Silent Hill, to me, the best part was before the enemy's even on the screen. You hear them, you know they're in the area, and you're just like, oh, crap.
I think it was Silent Hill 2, where it succeeded in freaking me out without ever actually having an enemy, because it was one of those movie gotchas with the mirror, where you look at the mirror, it's like, okay, I see my face in the mirror. It was in the hospital bathroom, I think, of one of the Silent Hills. And you look at the mirror, and it's like, okay, yeah. And then as you start walking away, the sink starts filling up with blood, and like you start seeing things in the mirror, and it's like, oh my god!
That's three? Yeah.
Okay.
I know, because that scene always crashed my computer, and I couldn't actually do it.
Oh.
Oh boy.
I'm just glad that scene was optional.
Yeah.
It was just a random room in the hospital that if you walked in and looked in the mirror, your character would begin pussing and bleeding, and the room would start to fill up, and then
your game would crash.
Well, the character would die in the mirror, and you're like, well, that was weird. And then the room that you're in starts doing the same thing. You're like, oh!
And then you run out.
And you run out.
Yeah. Because if you don't run out, then you actually will die, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, that's probably much more terrifying than a fast zombie.
Well, Silent Hill's hallmark was the enemies, yes, they were creepy and disturbing, but the biggest enemy of the whole series was
Silent Hill.
Was the town, the environment.
To kill you.
It was just the sense of oppression and desperation. And
yeah, that's true.
That was the biggest horror.
Which brings me to my favorite Silent Hill of all, which is Silent Hill 2. However, despite the fact that Silent Hill 2 is my favorite survival horror game of all time, I have still not played a minute of it. Because I'm a wuss. I can only play Resident Evil because those make me laugh. I cannot play Silent Hill because that would send me running screaming from the room.
What if I busted out the Game Shark and let you go infinite ammo on it?
No, that would still freak me out. Because remember, in Silent Hill 2, you can't hit the broadside of a barn with your gun.
That was the only way I was able to get through 2, is with infinite ammo.
Oh, okay.
Not because, it's just otherwise, I just got a little too shaky trying to play it. You can tell a game is genuinely creeping me out when I begin trash-talking the game.
Did Eternal Darkness do that to you?
Yes. I'd just be walking
need
around.
To fill the void.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, come on. Let's do this. You want some? Huh? Oh, shit.
Because, yeah, I mean, Silent Hill 2 is a very, very personal kind of horror game. Like, almost none of the horror is external, and what the horror is external, other people are there for, and it's their personal horror, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I love Silent Hill 2, but I still can't play a minute of it. Yeah. I wish I could, though.
When 3 came out, I was in college, I believe it was my senior year, and a friend of mine who loved those games invited a whole bunch of people over for sort of like a release party of it, if you will. Huh. This is not how you play this game, by the way. 8 people all staring at the TV somehow loses the horror quality when you start calling things, look out, Zamboni monster.
Well, so here's one thing, is that when we were playing Fatal Frame, we actually did it in a darkened room with about 8 people around and stuff. And Fatal Frame was genuinely freaky to some of those people. I remember one time I was at my friend Gary's... No, I was at my friend Florian's place for New Year's, and they were playing Fatal Frame. And the room was darkened. Mm-hmm. People were sitting on couches and, you know, just watching him play Fatal Frame. And at one point, my friend reaches out and starts just sort of patting someone else on the head, and there's this gigantic scream. Because, you know, and by patting them on the head, the gesture was taken as reached out and grabbed them by the head. And that was right around when someone went through the camera lens and saw a ghost.
Wow.
And so, I mean, how many survival horror games do you think of that you can actually play in a group like that and it'll still be freaky? Actually, how many survival horror games these days are freaky, you know?
Well, I have my hopes for the Wii make.
What?
For Silent Hill, right?
Yeah. They're basically retelling number one.
Well, hey, if there's any console out there these days that'll simulate terrible controls, it's the Wii.
Yeah. But, well...
I still can't play Mad World. God.
Oh, what? It's not that bad.
I was speaking earlier about how they took the wrong direction with Silent Hill 5, and when you're a Marine, you can fight. They're doing the opposite with this version, in that you can't fight at all.
Really?
So this could be either absolutely terrible or wonderful.
Wow, that's...
You can only run.
That's That's an interesting take on a game. I don't know how that's going to go at all.
Mm.
Now I'm thinking of Dead Space, which is another thing that's ostensibly supposed to be science fiction survival horror.
Mm-hmm. But feels
more
really
like... didn't feel like survival horror at all, because the biggest, baddest enemy in the game, when you start shooting into it, at it, curls up into a ball.
Don't.
Like, if it just continued running at you while it was you shot at it, then it would be scary. That game would be much more frightening if a few of the enemies, you know, were a little more inevitable instead of just going, and I shot your head off, and there go your arms, and your tentacles go.
I did like a lot of the Dead Space design. I mean, a lot of it was designed to sort of keep you in the experience. I mean, like, when I was first looking at it and I realized there was no HUD at all.
Oh, yeah.
That was really cool.
That was fun. Yeah. That was... Their UI design for that one was great, especially since Dead Space sort of contrasted directly in my mind with Resident Evil 5 and Resident Evil's traditionally terrible interface. Oh my god, I hate that interface.
I don't think you could... You'd be hard-pressed to find someone who didn't like Dead Space's UI.
But the problem, of course, is that Dead Space, you know, it did great at the atmospheric horror, you know, Bioshock style, where you read and heard other people suffering through their little piece of hell. But when it came to things actually coming at you, you went like, and here, I'm slowing time, I'm going to shoot you in the leg now.
You always felt in control of the situation.
I mean, here. I think survival horror stopped being a genre when you could buy ammo in Resident Evil.
When was that, 4?
4.
Okay.
What are you selling?
I mean, it's like... It just didn't work. Like, the entire... Like, one of the primary tenets for me with survival horror is this concept of you're only going to get what you find. If you can't get to the... If you can't get to a new place with the bullets that you have, you're screwed, son.
Get out your knife.
Resident Evil is the reason I have trouble playing roguelikes. And that is because I find the Magnum and I get 5 bullets for it. And I go, crap, I'm going to need this. And you hold on to it. I never use it.
And you die with it.
And then I die and reload my save. Whereas in roguelikes, like, wow, I just got this one-shot item that could pull me out of a jam. Oh, but I don't want to use it. You know, I might need it later. And then I never use it and die and lose it anyway.
Yeah.
How many shots did the golden guns have in Code Veronica?
Oh, I don't remember anymore.
Was it like 6 and that was it?
It was pretty limited. I mean, that was the entire point of, like, that's always the point of the Magnum. You almost, like... Ideally, the Magnum is something you get once, and you never even find bullets for. But that's just my opinion on it. I mean, some people actually like bullets.
So, does an actual combat system ruin survival horror as a genre? Then
I don't know.
Does that actually make it so that survival horror is no longer a genre, more of a style?
I don't.
And they're all just action games.
I don't think it's the actual combat system itself so much as there's so much more room for error. I mean, like. When you shot a bullet in Resident Evil 2, for example, you knew there was a very hard cap on how many of those you were going to get.
Yeah.
But,
well...
And then you played as Tofu, and then you knew there was a hard cap on everything, because you had a knife, and you were made of tofu.
That's why I strongly believe that's part of what survival horror is. I mean,
tofu?
When it comes down to it, there's somebody out there who's willing to do the entire thing with a knife, because it's technically possible.
I've seen people beat Marathon with just their fists.
Really?
Yes.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
I mean, when it comes to the point where you are encouraged to save everything you have to the point where you learn how to knife everything to death, that's when it feels like survival horror to me.
Well, let's see. Dom, how did you kill the boss in Resident Evil 5?
Which boss?
The final boss.
Oh, with my knife, actually. Yeah. I ran out of bullets and started stabbing him. And I relied on Albert, actually, to get my ass out of the fire, because it was in the fire a lot.
The amount of syringes that got shoved into your chest.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if survival horror, I don't think, is dead. I mean, horror still exists, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering about the survival part. I mean,
because
you always survive in games, so to speak, unless you're playing Legacy of Kain. But I don't know. To me, the word survival implies that you need to get the hell out of here. That you can't win. Run.
Yeah, that's actually that makes sense. There's a very strong portion of it where it's like, you know, you're just trying to get by. You should not be doing well at this game.
So Dead Rising does not count as survival horror, then.
Well, Dead Rising is comedy.
Yeah, that.
Dead Rising is more B-movie comedy than survival horror. I mean, there's the point where
Resident Evil 1 was more B-movie comedy than survival horror.
But did you ever crowd surf a zombie in Resident Evil 1?
I did stab them a lot.
Not quite the same.
Okay, fine.
Did you ever stick a surf bot hat on a zombie?
Did you ever get points for taking pictures of a zombie's breasts in Resident Evil 1?
I would like to say yes, but no. There was actually points for the... it was for sexy, right?
Yes.
I forgot that there were sexy points for the pictures.
And they were quite wrong most of the time.
Yeah. Oh, I love Dead Rising. Except for the part where there's a time limit. I hate that part.
Well, yeah, Dead Rising was an interesting take on it, just because your limiter was time, and you never run out of equipment because you're in a mall.
You could say that the other survivors in Dead Rising were playing a survival horror because, you know, they had very fragile existences.
And also they existed purely on the generosity of your inventory. Mm-hmm. It's like, here, you get a baseball bat.
Yeah.
You get the chainsaw. Good luck. And did you ever give those guys the shotgun, by the way? That was such a bad idea. Such a bad idea.
Nah.
Yeah, no.
You give them nice weapons that have a wide swing and pushes people out of the way, because that's what they need. Yes. A pistol won't do them any good.
And also, they're just as likely to shoot you in the back as they are to do anything else. So yeah, I guess all of the other survivors in Dead Rising were playing a survival horror game while you were playing golf.
Yeah. How many times can I ride a roller coaster? Whee! Hey, look, a shopping cart. Whee!
That's the thing. Dead Rising, the horror, it ceased to be horror and just picked up as comedy the minute I picked up a frying pan in Dead Rising.
Put it on the stove.
And then used it to burn faces.
Inventive, yes.
I mean, it was a fun experience, but
up until the freaking courtyard.
Yeah, I never want to do those respawning convicts ever again.
They ruined the game for me.
That was the whole thing. Respawning gear, respawning enemies. It just sort of seemed out of place. I mean, respawning zombies, that's fine. That's normal. You're never going to run out of zombies because, well, it's the zombie apocalypse like that. But respawning humans?
Yeah.
What? Respawning humans with a Humvee-mounted machine gun.
Yeah.
That was no fun.
Weren't they the only non-zombies that respawned as well?
I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
What the hell, Capcom?
Speaking of what the hell, Capcom, it's time to come to my favorite portion of this podcast, which is the final portion of Resident Evil 5, which is quite infamous.
Okay, so to preface this, are they running through a volcano, was it?
They're running through an active volcano.
Okay. Yep.
And they're being chased by Wesker, who is the ultimate, you know, evolution of this virus. He's got all these tentacles coming after you. He has like pieces of your plane stuck in him that he's throwing at you.
Tight leather pants.
Sure, why not? And he's running after you.
And I think by this point he has like a really, really, really British accent. So that just makes
him... he might have mutated into a British accent by that point.
And so, you know, you get split up. And one of you is hanging off from an edge, and you have to hit the A button a bunch of times, I think, in order to climb
die.
Up.
Yeah, spaz on A to not die. And
I think that one almost killed Albert's wrist, too.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, there's this part that totally killed any urge on my part to play Resident Evil 5 ever again, or even to think about Resident Evil as a survival horror series ever again, which is you run up to a rock.
A 10-foot-tall boulder, by the way.
Perfectly spherical, even.
And you run up to it, and you know what you do? You start pushing it.
You start pushing it first,
because that makes sense.
He's trying to roll it into a gap so that he can jump across and continue running away from the giant evil Wesker thingy.
And at one point, the QuickTime event turns into punch and hook. Then he pulls back from pushing this rock, which was moving, by the way, and he starts punching it
with his rock-like biceps. He just gives it a couple of gut punches.
You can almost hear like the chamber reload in his bicep as he pulls back.
Well, no, that's because you kept saying, Falcon!
Falcon!
We were playing that. That was you breaking that experience, part of the experience. Although the experience was really already was broken.
Hey.
And yeah, just in case you're wondering, he does eventually punch the boulder into submission, at which point it rolls down into the gap of its
And then you
volition.
Jump off the jump over it. Yay.
My question is it the same boulder from Resident Evil 4?
There was a boulder in Resident Evil 4?
Yes. One of the first cutscenes, they go, hey, this ain't a cutscene, press A to survive, is a boulder starts rolling after you.
Oh, boy.
My thoughts, it's the real mastermind, and you finally kill it in 5.
That would make sense.
I don't know, you knock it into the lava. There's a difference. Maybe it comes back as the Darth Vader rock.
Oh, the obsidian boulder.
Yes. What? The zombie boulder?
Well, no, obsidian is a... It's a
volcanic rock.
Yeah.
It'd be harder. That's all.
You could make a knife out of it.
And that's when survival horror as a genre died to me.
It wasn't when you shoot rocket launchers at Wesker as you fly away. No,
it really wasn't, actually.
It's like it just went into a completely different genre of unintentional comedy.
No, it was already in the genre of unintentional comedy. I mean, come on, Jill Sandwich.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Instead of being, you know, bad acting unintentional comedy, it's... What the hell is this?
The most unsettling part of the whole game, though, had to be the alligators. Or are they crocodiles?
Oh, the insta-kill alligators?
Yeah, because it was a whole lot of, oh crap.
That actually was the scariest part of the game, wasn't it? You would actually see a ripple in the water and you go, oh crap!
You can't win, run. Mm-hmm.
And it was crocodiles. They weren't even dead crocodiles. They were just crocodiles. Does that mean Pitfall is survival horror? You can't actually kill any of those things.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, they also don't chase
I don't
you,
know.
Though.
If you want to talk about the ultimate survival horror, I think Frogger is it.
You can't actually, you can win, though. You get to the end. And then you have to run again.
Again, yeah. That's the thing. I mean, survival horror, they do eventually get away from the threat.
Sometimes.
Usually.
Maybe.
Depending on the game.
So, other than the Wiimake, is there any survival horror that you guys are looking forward to in the future? What is coming? There's Dead Space 2, which is coming, which, as we've mentioned, is only vaguely survival horror.
There is a 360 game being worked on, but I can't remember its name. It looks like Silent Hill, but it's not Silent Hill.
Huh. Quiet Forest?
Yeah. Somewhat Quiet Mountain.
Yeah, that's right.
No. Bugger. I can't remember the name of it. I'm going to have to look this up after this. Even its trailer has this sort of garage band like soundtrack.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
I don't know, actually. I mean, like, the closest thing to survival horror that we've been getting these days is stuff like Left 4 Dead.
Left 4 Dead is kind of the definition of survival horror, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
Well, not really.
Well, you got the same issue of you have to cooperate with other people.
And not only that, but...
Infinite
ammo pistol, and the fact that, you know, you've got three people who, if they're competent, can get you out of trouble.
Yeah. It's a different concept, but it's very strongly rooted in it. Like, it holds to the traditions, at least, of...
It's definitely a horror.
Yeah.
But whether it's survival...
Yeah, that's true. It's more a horror game than anything else.
Co-op horror. Then again, I actually tried playing that on Steam once, and the horror really was other people.
Yeah.
It's just like Hell. Hell is other people. Horror. Left 4 Dead is other people.
But, I'll be honest, I got Left 4 Dead. I only played it once, and I've never loaded up again.
Because of other people?
No, I just... Well, this is going to be surprising. I don't like zombies. I don't need any help further
demonizing people?
Demonizing society, I guess. And, well, to make them just into plain monsters, it's just... I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me, and I just have trouble enjoying the zombie genre.
All right, that's fair.
That's true. I never really... That's true. Well, most of my zombie hates mostly just spill over vampire hate, so I can't really say.
Well, vampire hate, we get into Castlevania there, and let's wait on that one.
Oh, fine.
Actually, we've already talked about that one. We did our... listen to our Simon Belmont podcast.
is there a little asterisk in the corner of the screen right now that says, see previous episode?
Editor. Yeah,
exactly.
I think I'm going to call you guys true believers at this point. We've talked about Simon Belmont, true believers. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't think... I really don't think survival horror is going to be a major genre anymore. I mean, the closest thing we're going to get are the BioShocks and the Dead Spaces, where you get solid single-player experiences, but those are going to be more about the gameplay than the actual, like, well, what we would consider to be survival horror.
BioShock was not survival horror. That was psychological. That was basically screw you, Ayn Rand.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, BioShock, yeah, I've never felt sort of out of control in that game.
You could shoot bees from your hands.
Yes. Yeah, not that I ever did, though. That was just creepy.
I guess that's the thing. BioShock, you just had so many options to do stuff.
I'm really hoping that the remake will be good, because I want this experience again, and I just don't want to have to load up one of my old games. I love it when the environment...
If it's Silent Hill 2, I'm leaving the room, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But yeah, I mean, like, atmosphere-wise, I think that's the closest we're going to get.
It's such a shame, because I love the atmosphere of the Silent Hill games. I mean, 4 even pulled it off, even though that originally wasn't supposed to be a Silent Hill.
And also, the worst thing about Silent Hill 4 was the last half of it,
yes.
where it turned into a gigantic escort.
It's like, okay, hey, you remember those first 4 levels you just played? You want to do them again in reverse order with an escort? That'd be awesome. Oh, by the way, your escort is also kind of gimp as well, so good luck with that.
And also, the ending depends on how hurt she is.
Wow.
Yeah, doesn't that suck?
Ow. Yeah, no.
Though, for one of my favorite mechanics of the genre has to be from 4, and that is you get this one stake at the beginning of the game, and the zombies in the game are like these floating, ring-like ghosts. Oh, sorry, the ring-like ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And they can go through walls and they leave bloody messes everywhere, but you can't kill them. You can just knock them down. When you knock them down, you can use that stake to pin them to the ground.
Yep.
Leave the stake there. And so you basically go, okay, I'm going to be in here for a while. You on the ground. And you hold them there and you try and do what you need to do and then come back for the stake and grab it and then run.
You see, that's
awesome.
That is the essence of survival horror to me. It's like, I can't kill you, but I can keep you contained long enough to do what I need to do and get out.
And yeah,
because I mean, Nemesis did that.
Resource.
Nemesis did that too, right? Resident Evil Nemesis.
Yeah, Nemesis.
Like the Nemesis would just keep coming after you, and there were just countless numbers of scenes where you had to run from it until you finally figured out a way to beat it. Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you were really good at the game, you knew where everything was. You could actually, you know, down Nemesis each time he comes by. I never did that. But yeah, Nemesis, I think, was this like the strongest example of, you know, the tie to the horror genre that Resident Evil had, because it was the dude who kept showing up behind every, you know, window. And, you know, you couldn't run away from him because he kept following you and would appear in a different corridor entirely. I mean, that's classic Jason, man.
That's true. So, this is toward the end of the survival horror podcast, which turned into a lot of tangents because it's us. But
I like pie.
Let's end with
Pie's
a list.
Good.
People like lists. They give us something to talk about. We're going to go with our top 3 survival horror, either monsters or villains. And so, Danny, would you like to start on what your number 3 villain is?
My ties to survival horror is less to Resident Evil than it is to, say, House of the Dead. Because, you know,
we've established that House of the Dead is not survival horror. It's a rail shooter that happens to use horror.
I know, but the thing is, like, there is that, like, the last boss, Magician. I mentioned this before. It's like, he was the closest thing to, like, that sort of puzzle boss that I'd seen in survival horror games, where you don't know where to shoot him. You have to guess. And, you know, if you guess wrong, you're doing tick damage and probably going to die.
I'd say my number 3 would have to be the Tyrant from Resident Evil 2.
One was the Tyrant? That was the big baddie at the end, or was he?
No, he was in your second playthrough. He was basically the Nemesis prequel.
Got it.
He had big long trench coats. He just looked like this really muscular, pissed off dude.
Wait, there was a Tyrant at the end of 1 also, wasn't there?
No, Tyrant was the last boss of 1.
Right.
If I remember correctly, the enemy in 2. I think he had a different classification, but he was basically Tyrant level.
Okay. Yeah, it was Tyrant something. Like,
it's
no.
Like something X, I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. At the beginning of your second playthrough, a helicopter flies by and drops a pod, and then a little later the pod breaks open and...
Tyrant comes out.
Yeah, I getcha. And he just shows up and messes up your day.
That's cool. My number three is not nearly as cool as your guys' because it's not a last boss, technically. It's The Rock. not Dwayne Johnson The Rock. It's that rock, big 10-foot tall rock from Resident Evil 4 and 5, apparently, because it's a recurring villain.
It is a recurring boss.
But, you know, I died to that rock so many times.
I did too.
I watched you.
Because if you didn't get to that rock fast enough, and you weren't a really good button masher, then Tyrant would catch up to you and fling you into the lava.
Well, see, it turns out player two is supposed to be shooting the boss while you're doing this.
Are you serious?
Yes. You're supposed to be shooting him and keeping him busy while you push down the rock.
You're such a liar. Oh, I hate Resident Evil 5 even more now.
My coworkers explained this to me, and I just, there was such a red mark on my forehead.
Oh,
that is awesome. You had no idea.
That's so terrible. I hate you, Capcom.
That's like an hour of Dom and Albert's life they're not getting back.
Oh, I'm not getting that hour back. I want that hour back, Capcom, so I can give it back to Sega. Oh, God. Okay. Danny, go to number two. I'm depressed now.
My number two is actually Nemesis, because, like I said, Nemesis is the classic. He's Jason with a tentacle and a bazooka. I mean, come on. Where can you go wrong with that?
A lot of ways. I'm going to take you to Comic Cat one of these days, Danny, and I'm going to show you the Capcom
poor
section.
Choice,
and...
Poor choice of words. I will accept that. Moving on.
My number two is the first enemy of Silent Hill 1, and it's basically like your big welcome to the world, and that you're walking, it's dark now, what's with all the chain link fences? Oh crap, children with knives.
Okay, yeah.
These little bastards that actually kill you. You can't win. And, wow, it's just creepy as hell.
Okay. My number two is not quite as creepy as Children with Knives. And I'm sorry about that. It's actually the dogs in the original Resident Evils. Because I have a long history with video game dogs and being unable to kill them. Shinobi, the dogs with the knives in their mouths? I couldn't kill those. Actually, I could, but it was tough.
They'd kill you.
Yes.
With their metal heads?
Yes. Well, no, because they would block, auto-block from the front. And so, you know, dogs in any game, they just make a mockery of my skill at that game. Because they're a smaller target, they do more damage than the people, and they're vicious. They will, like, in Resident Evil 5, they will hide under the train and come out at you. In other Resident Evils, well, okay, I couldn't kill them because they would run off screen. I hated that.
Has there been any dogs in Devil May Cry that you could get your vengeance on?
Actually, yes. In Devil May Cry 4, there are hellhounds.
Yes.
And what you do is...
I've gotten my vengeance on them.
When you meet a hellhound, you punch it in the mouth, grab it by the tail... Pull on the tail hard enough that a fireball comes out of its mouth, and aim that fireball at somebody. And then you throw the dog to the ground. It's
in Bayonetta, those same hellhounds, you summon a gigantic spiky wheel, stick it into the thing's back, kick it so it spins,
and then kick the wheel into the opposite wall.
It's very satisfying. Stupid video game dogs. I hate those stupid dogs. I love dogs in real life, but video game dogs are my nemesis. Like, video game dogs have killed me more than almost anything behind last bosses.
Well, yes.
And bottomless pits.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so my number one actually hasn't come up yet so far, because we haven't even talked about it, but I haven't even played the game that this thing is in, but I am in fact terrified of it. The Gru.
That does not count.
What?
That is not survival
dark.
Horror.
You might be eaten by a Gru.
That is not survival horror. That's
you don't even
Zork.
Know what it looks like and it'll kill you.
Oh, come on. I'm not accepting this number one. The Gru is not survival horror. It's
okay, fine.
It's text adventure death.
Okay, fine. I'll have to go with Wesker then, because Wesker is the classic man behind the plague. I mean, you know, he's the one who's in charge of pretty much the entire...
Resident Evil series.
Yeah, at least in terms, at least he's the one who's the representative of, you know,
and he does keep coming back.
Yeah,
and his lip syncing is freaking amazing.
Oh, that's
what?
It's seriously like Capcom's facial reconstruction technology.
Okay,
it was really good.
Okay. Yeah,
that makes sense. But yeah, and then there was the game where you had to play as him, and All I got was a knife, and if you were lucky, a magnum with 6 bullets in it that you can use on the last boss.
Hey, you can play as Wesker in Lost Planet 2 if you pre-order it.
You can play as Wesker in the Mercenaries mode of Resident Evil 5.
Yeah, five? Okay. But yeah, I'm trying to remember which game it was that he was originally. I think it was in one of the,
In 5, I think he has an infinite ammo magnum in Mercenaries mode.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem right.
Well, you have to unlock him by doing a lot of stuff, right? So anyway, Ian, what's your number one?
My number one, okay. Silent Hill 4, the lighthouse prison level. You're running around, it's really quiet, and every now and again you hear what sounds like a baby, like whimpering or crying. And at one point, I turn the corner, and there's just giant two-headed baby with arms.
I think
have arms.
Okay. Oh, no. Picture gigantic baby heads, two of them, wrapped in shadow, and then two muscular arms going to the ground.
Wait, Danny, wasn't that a level in Vampire Savior?
Probably.
The Fetus of God or something like that?
Well, they're just, the first one you come across is just standing there, and you're like, the heck? And then it turns ever so slowly and begins screaming and crying. And if you've ever heard a baby, like, in pain and screaming...
So wait a second. Hold on, Ian. Hold on. So what you're trying to tell us is that you're afraid of children.
Two-headed giant ones.
So if I showed you The Shining and those little twins, you would run screaming from the room?
Maybe if they had 8 legs or something. But that's another issue. I don't know. It was just incredibly unsettling to see those buggers.
Reasonable.
My number one is actually serious compared to my numbers 2 and 3, which were rocks and dogs. My number one...
Nature's deadliest hunters.
Rock?
The Rock.
Yeah.
Anyway, no.
And nature's best nanny.
Well, hey, wait a second. A rock is nature's deadliest killer because a rock can kill Superman. But anyway, that's for another podcast. That's probably going to be covered in Kevin Smith, actually, which is coming soon, ladies and gentlemen. But my number one is the main character of Silent Hill 2. The game's over 10 years old now, so I don't care about spoilers. But the main character of Silent Hill 2, he's not really a villain, but he's not a good man. Because in the plot of Silent Hill 2, like, this is one of the big reveals in video game history that actually surprised me and went, holy crap! It all makes sense now!
So, spoiler tags if you're still into that.
Yeah, spoiler if you're still you're still thinking that you're going to play Silent Hill 2 one of these days. But the main character in Silent Hill 2 murdered his wife. And he had his reasons for doing it, but he's so guilty about it, he drives himself to Silent Hill 2 with a letter that he thinks is from his wife, but is actually blank. Which is awesome, by the way. And, you know, it's supposedly his dead wife wrote him a letter saying, come to Silent Hill, I'm waiting here for you. Later, you discover that that thing is blank. And as a matter of fact, the number of times you look at that letter affects your ending.
Yeah.
On whether or not you feel guilty enough to overcome that guilt of killing your wife. And the big reveal comes in this really awesome scene where you go... You finally, I think it's in your wife's hospital room, like the copy of your wife's hospital room.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this little tape that says, watch me. And you watch that tape, and it shows that character and his deathly ill wife, kisses her goodnight, and he smothers her. And I watched that, and I went, holy crap.
Yeah.
I'm playing a killer.
And not even the God of War kind.
No. I'm playing a guy. This is all his guilt over killing his wife. Oh my God. Now what? it's like that. This explains everything.
Suddenly the nurses with plastic bags over their head make a whole lot more sense.
And also that woman who looks exactly like his wife. And is like, wow! And that was, you know, the big reveal at the end of one of my favorite horror games of all time, which I can't play. I feel like I need to say this again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong candidate right there.
You didn't play the villain. He's not really the villain, but he's the origin of everything. It's a very personal horror. Like, you know, in other ones, it was the town trying to kill you. In Silent Hill 2, it's you wondering whether or not you deserve to die.
It's
so awesome. I love that. just wish I could play it all the way through, but I can't, so I won't.
What if I start playing like March of the Gladiators while you're playing it? Would that help?
I don't know. You might conflate with like clown fear. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I might become afraid of clowns at that point.
Why are you afraid of clowns from Silent Hill 2? There are no clowns in Silent Hill 2!
In fact, the clown I can think of in any kind of even horror-ish game is the greatest clown in the history of video games because he gives you the chainsaw!
He lets you beat the game!
He lets you beat the game! He gives you the two chainsaws! The respawning chainsaws! That are just so good!
Well, maybe we'll try plugging in the fog machine or something.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that'll get past your hero. That'll get past your fear of Silent Hill, too. We'll just play Jukebox here over and over in the background.
And so that's a wrap on the S-Words podcast about the survival horror genre. You can find us online at s-words-podcast.com. You can also send us email at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. There we are on Twitter at twitter.com/s_words. And Danny, is there anything else?
Don't come!
Jill Sandwich.
Anyway, so that is a wrap on the survival horror podcast. We went off topic a bit. We didn't really have as guided an experience as we could have. But you know what? It's all going to be okay because we're going to end this off with a quote sound off because there are just so many quotes out there that are just so bad from this genre. So Danny, would you like to start?
I'd rather not because most, like, the new thing that's coming right now is like,
suffer like G did.
What the?
That's from House of the Dead 2. Ian.
Talking of the Dead.
What are you buying?
What are you selling? No, mine is actually, what's this? It's a lockpick. I think that you, the master of unlocking, can use it.
Hello, and welcome to the Bat Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture topics beginning with Batman. I'm Batman.
I know!
I'm not Batman?
All right, let's do the real opening.